listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Brian Hayes, Dave Festchuk from the Toronto Star. Steve Phillips, our baseball analyst, will join us in about 5 minutes. Bob McKenzie in studio later in the hour. Get back into the Leaf loss last night, what they had to say about it at practice today. They got the Flyers in town tomorrow night, and then they're at Ottawa on Saturday. And Ray was saying this last hour that 7 of their next 8 games are against teams out of the playoffs. They have an opportunity to rack up some points here. And Boston's done them a bit of a favor the past couple of games. They've lost. You know, they went 19 straight without losing. But the Leafs are still 4 back. And they have the tiebreak, but they're still 4 back. And they're running out of time here if they want to find a way to get home ice.
Yeah, and they've got a great opportunity here. There's no doubt. But problem is, Hayes, we've seen it again and again. They've played down to the level of their competition far too often. So these games against these teams that are allegedly out of the playoff race, and most of them are completely out of it, including Philly, they're not gimmies.
No, they're not. So we'll see what Bob says about that in about 20 minutes. Baseball, there's been a bunch of different rule changes that are going to take effect in 2020, including expanding the rosters from 25 to 26, which won't have a huge effect, but you might be able to pick up on it. Maybe someone else gets added to the bullpen, maybe a utility player, maybe a kid comes up that you weren't expecting to be a part of the roster. But I think the biggest news for a fan is that they're going to have one central trade deadline.
Yes.
Which for years I have been pleading with baseball to upgrade and update their whole approach to a made-for-TV event. You know, it's all about content. That's the world we live in right now. How do you create the most buzz, especially when they have a monopoly over the sports scene towards the end of the month?
Yeah.
You know, by the end of July, there's not, unless it's an Olympic year or a World Cup or a Euro year, they have a monopoly over the sports scene.
It's a great point.
And for them, you know, throughout their existence, to allow the trade deadline to bleed into August when NFL camps are showing up and college football shows up, never made any sense.
Doesn't make any sense.
Like, how did it take this long for them to figure that out?
It took them an awfully long time, didn't it? Like, when you think about the industry that is the NBA trade deadline and the NHL trade deadline, I mean, the fact that baseball had this muddy system that only the most hardcore observers really understood, right? You understood the non-waiver trade deadline, but who could really explain to you what that really meant and who was non-waiver and what would happen after the non-waiver deadline where you could still acquire players and trades? I mean, it was very complicated.
It was so complicated. You could still make moves into September, but then they couldn't play in the playoffs.
Right, which made no sense.
No sense.
Why is that attractive to a fan?
No, you've got to make it simple for people.
You
have to make it simple for the fans, and people will get jacked up. And they will be in Toronto.
Yes.
Because this team is built to be sellers at the trade deadline.
Yep.
They are going to be selling. Like, there are no miracles here. This team is not going to be very good. Everyone, I think, is bracing for that. They're going to turn this roster over a lot in the next 2 or 3 years. And between now and the trade deadline, there are going to be a couple of big names that go.
Yeah.
I think Marcus Stroman is still in the firing line. I don't care what Mark Shapiro is saying on the record about how much they love him in the clubhouse and they like that type of individualism. Aaron Sanchez, I think if he comes out with a heater and they feel like they can get value, they may move on from him. You know, the older guys that they've signed to these one-year deals, if they can stay healthy and perform, they'll move on from them.
Yep.
You know, I think Justin Smoke is a guy. Last year of his deal, very equitable deal. If he can perform, they'll move on from him.
He could definitely be
an asset. There's a bunch of guys that you can circle that I think the Jays will be players by the end of July.
Yeah.
Now, that's 2020. Again, these rules don't come into effect until next year, but regardless, this year they're going to be players.
Yeah, for sure. And it's going to be, look, the one that I think is the most groundbreaking and earth-shaking, or has the certainly potential to be this, is this three-batter minimum. Right, in 2020, not this season coming up, but in 2020.
For relievers
coming into the game. Relievers will face a minimum of 3 batters. Like, that to me is a fundamental shift.
Do you like that move?
No, I'm not sure I do. I'll have to see it in play, but I could see it being something that is hated very quickly.
Well, the pitchers are going to hate it. The managers are going to hate it. But anything a manager hates, I generally think is probably a good idea to do the complete to continue to push forward with it. Because these guys, you know how they're groomed.
Yeah.
They're programmed.
Micromanaging.
Micromanage and always lean towards the conventional wisdom and what I know and what I'm comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
I'm comfortable with a system, and that's what I want to continue to utilize. Because I don't think this is just simply about them shaving time. You know, I think this is about creating more offense.
Yes.
Which is not a bad thing.
No.
You know, that's...
You have to. The pitching's become far too dominant.
It's been an issue the past couple of years.
Yeah.
There just have been way too many strikeouts, way too many outs, easy outs. Pitchers have been dominating.
Right. You need to find some way to curb the dominance of pitching. And I look, this may be the best way. I'm not sure it will be, but I'm with you. I'm in favor of trying. I'm in favor of trying to push the pendulum toward the hitter.
Well, and this is where, again, the NFL has been at the forefront of the amount of changes that they've made where in the future they go, well, we got it wrong. We'll go back to the old system.
Right.
It's your league.
Right.
You know, you don't have to clear it through Congress.
Exactly.
If you pass it, and I know it is a little bit more complicated, you can't just snap your fingers if you're the commissioner because the players have to be included in all this.
That's the problem.
It's collectively bargained. I understand that. But it's your league.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a referendum. The fans don't have to vote on this kind of stuff. If you implement it in 2020 and by 2022 you don't think it works, go back to the table and change it.
At least you found out it didn't work.
Exactly.
And you can move on. But I agree with you. Like, I would give the NFL and I would give the NBA a lot of credit for always pushing the envelope toward offense. And I think Major League Baseball, they've really pushed the advantage to defense with the shift, with relievers specializing, with guys throwing over 100. And that's not good for the game.
Here's Steve Phillips, our TSN 1050 baseball analyst. Steve, we were talking about these new rules that will be implemented in 2020. I saw you tweeting about it today, the three-batter minimum for a reliever. And I noticed you weren't a big fan. Take us through that thought process. Why do you not like this idea of a new rule?
Right. Well, first, I think it materially changes the strategy of the game. And I think it ties the hands of the manager, where you're saying to the manager, go out and win the game. But by the way, you can't do this, this, or that. So go ahead, go get them. And effectively, the manager would be put in a position to either, because of the usage of this, to either use lesser relievers in high-leverage situations or risk injury for his pitchers. Because what happens a lot during the season is the manager would go to a guy in his bullpen and say, can you get one out for me today? Can you get me one guy? And a lot of times, and it doesn't have to necessarily be a situational left-hander, it could be a power arm right-hander. It could be a guy with a slider. It could be a ground ball pitcher who's gotten a lot of usage recently. And he says, listen, if I have that one at bat where I need to get a double play, can I go to you? And a lot of times the guys would typically say yes. And the manager might go and out there and think, okay, this is the way I'm going to go about doing it, and bring in that reliever to try to get a double play or get a big strikeout in an inning, that sort of thing. And now, anybody you bring in a game, even with two outs in the inning, you have to understand that you better be willing for that guy to have to face three batters. Sure, maybe he'll get the first out, the inning will end, and you'll be able to take him out. But if he doesn't, and a guy gets a hit, you've got to leave him in. Then if the next guy gets on, you got to leave him in. And you're now putting at risk one of your better pitchers who might be a bit fatigued. And so you're going to end up going with lesser relievers in high-leverage situations, and there will be games lost that managers are going to say, if I didn't have to follow these stupid rules, I'd have a chance to win a game right now, all because they want to be able to improve the pace of play. How about take a guy out of the bullpen, and instead of giving him seven pitches to warm up, give him three. Right? He just warmed up in the bullpen. Let him get used to the mound, throw three pitches, cut down the time that way. I just think that you're materially changing the strategy of the game when you do this, and I don't like it at all.
Well, don't you think it's also, though, about creating more offense? You know, everything you just detailed sounds pretty entertaining to me. You know, some guy who can't get it up to 95, but, you know, he's tapping out at 92, all of a sudden the ball is in play a lot more. As a fan, I find that much more entertaining than concerning myself with whether or not a manager likes it or not.
Yeah, I don't. I think there are other ways to worry about offense in the game. But I would not say to a manager, you have to win, but you can't use your roster. We've just turned into this age where you know, you tell a team you've got to get the most out of your talent. You look at the Tampa Bay Rays. The Tampa Bay Rays, Kevin Cash, the manager of the Rays, I asked him this winter, if not for the use of the opener, how many games would you have won? And he said, not 90. I don't know how many. If we had managed it conventionally, I don't know how many we would have won, but it wouldn't have been 90. And what teams are doing now is this new way of managing is giving smaller market teams an opportunity to compete. We've sort of given them a way to level the playing field a little bit, and now what effectively we're doing is saying, yep, that worked, but it worked too well, and now we've got to change it. And I think it really hurts smaller market teams in this way too, where they can afford bullpenning, they can afford that, they can't afford the big impact starting pitchers, and teams like the Yankees, who have eight deep in their bullpen of elite pitchers, they're fine. If I don't have to pitch a guy back-to-back days or 3 days in a row, I still have an elite arm to go to. The other teams don't. And I think you're disadvantaging small market teams this way, too, because teams like the Yankees, teams like the Dodgers, and that just go out and buy all the bullpen they want, they now can compete in a different way than some of the other clubs can.
So, Steve, there's a lot of people who acknowledge that the game has some issues with, you know, too many strikeouts, too much pitching dominance, too many shifts, not enough scoring, too many home runs, and not enough other types of plays. But there aren't a lot of easy solutions, so I sort of get what Manfred's trying to do here. He's trying to inject at least something to try something to change something. But you don't like that. But do you think they should do anything?
Well, I don't. First of all, I don't think that he's doing this three-pitcher minimum for anything other than pace of play. He doesn't want pitching changes during the inning in order to try to keep the game moving. So I think that's one of the issues. I don't think he's doing it because he thinks it's going to generate offense. I think he's doing it because he thinks that he doesn't want to see so many pitching changes taking place during the course of the game. And I honestly don't think that people at the game, I think that if your home team's there, you're there and you want to win and you want your manager to manage the game in a way to win, and I don't think the way that you win is going to matter nearly as much. So, they're going to study moving the mound back. They're going to study lowering the mound. And doing those sorts of things. And I think it does need to be studied because I worry about the health and you know, the risk that you're putting pitchers at by changing, you know, the platform from which they throw. But I think that some part of this is cyclical, and I do think there will be adjustments made. And I do think that at some point, players, the way to do it where value will be found is in guys who don't strike out. And then you're going to go through this period where guys don't strike out, but maybe they don't hit as many home runs. And they go back to a competitive level of play. It's always a game of adjustments. We just happen to be in this area where the game's adjusted a certain way. But what we are seeing is we're seeing hitters catch up to the 100-mile-per-hour fastball right now. That they actually, you know, where the velocity's gone up, guys look at it now and think, all right, if the new norm is 100, we can make that adjustment. It's the secondary stuff that can still be effective. So I think people are making a big deal out of something that's not really a big deal just yet. And I think we've seen a lot of that reactionary sort of movement in baseball. We see it in free agency with the union and players. We're seeing it with everybody else. I think you just got to let the cycle run its course, and we'll get back to a different kind of baseball.
With Steve Phillips, our TSN 1050 baseball analyst, one big change in 2012 that I am a huge supporter of has to do with the trade deadline. They're going to have one focused single trade deadline like every other league, just like the NHL, NBA, NFL. It's always been overly complex and complicated for the average fan. I don't think it's been very easy to track. But moreover, it's about content. You know, if you're a TV network, if you're a radio show, if you're a scribe, you can lead up to one date and focus on it. I love this move in 2020. As a former GM yourself, do you appreciate what baseball is doing here?
I don't, and here's why. Having been the one to have to put a team together, it really makes it difficult because now, with the trade deadline staying at July 31st, you've got a third of the season left, and you're saying to teams that are on the bubble, you're either all in or you're all out, and there's no in-between. You can't sort of wait it out a little bit, which is what the waiver trade deadline allowed you to do. And it actually put you in a pretty good spot where if you were on the bubble, it meant you were a few games out, you weren't in first place, and it gave you access to better players before teams that were ahead of you in the standings had access to them. Now you're going to have teams make a decision, 2 months left in the season, a third of the season remaining, and they're going to have to say we're in or we're out. And I will tell you, the way teams will look at that is they'll say I'm out. They won't say I'm in. They're going to say I'm out, and we're either going to sell or we're going to stand pat and not do anything. And the idea, I thought, was let's have as many teams in it as we can going down to the month of September and make the races more dramatic and more interesting. That team that's four games out on July 31st is going to look at it and go, geez, I don't know. And then what they're going to do is they're going to win the first eight games in August, and they'll have nowhere to go and improve their team. So that's one part of the problem. The other part of the problem is that having a third of the season where you have nowhere to go to fix a catastrophe or to fix a major injury. So let's say that your starting catcher goes down on August 15th. There's nowhere to go to replace that catcher other than your minor league system bringing up some journeyman guy, and it could completely compromise your ability to win. And you can't trade to go get a premium other catcher while you have one, but when you lose one, maybe there is a guy out there to go get, and you've got no chance to do it. The other thing is this, is that the Josh Donaldson deal last year couldn't happen under this new scenario. Remember, Donaldson was hurt on July 31st. They couldn't trade him because he wasn't even playing then. But he got healthy, and then at the end of August, he was able to get back healthy, show that he could play, and they were able to make a deal. That sort of a trade, if a guy's hurt on July 31st, you've got no chance of him being able to be traded, and you're going to end up with guys that you're going to be stuck with rather than able to trade. So I think there's a lot more complications to it than you think. Leaving a third of the season where you've got no ability to improve your team.
Well, it's no different than any other league, though, Steve. Like, if Kawhi Leonard gets injured tonight, you're that's it. Sorry, you know, you're done.
Right.
That's just the way it works.
Right.
You know,
I get where you're coming from
because you're looking at it through the lens of a GM. But I'm telling you, from an entertainment purpose, this is a grand slam. Like, you're going to have a focus on a date.
I don't think it's a grand slam at all. I really don't.
Well, would you push it to the end of August? What if it was the end of August?
Here's the thing. If they're going to take away the waiver trade deadline, then I think they have to at least push the regular non-waiver trade deadline to August 15th. Mm. I would be satisfied with that. So you know, that at least it's buying me more time to decide who I am and who I'm not, and to protect myself against some injury to be able to access other players. Because the other challenge that they have is that they're limiting September rosters to 28 players. That's a problem, too, because I'm okay with having 28 players declared as eligible for a game in September, or 26 players, but I think teams should still be able to call up as many as they want. They just have to stipulate which guys are eligible to play. When you only allow a team to have 28 players on their roster in September, remember, there are no minor league seasons, so you have no, if somebody gets hurt, you can't go to AAA and call somebody up. AAA is over. And so what will happen when you have a 26-man roster, that extra guy will be a pitcher, and then when you go to September, you're going to add two guys. You have to add a backup catcher to protect yourself, and you're going to have one other guy. It's either going to be utility man or it's going to be a pitcher, but you aren't going to be able to sort of protect yourself. And so you're going to end up sending a taxi squad of players down to your spring training site to try to keep them in shape because you have to protect yourself if there are injuries. You're going to need length. You're going to need a stolen base guy. You're going to need a guy to lead off an inning. You're going to have to send 8 or 9 guys down. And then the question is, the union's going to say, are you paying them? Because their season's over. So do they get paid? Do they get service time? You've got a whole other – so when we come up with these rule changes – they have unintended consequences that maybe you're solving one thing, but it's creating another problem. And I think anytime you create a problem where you're putting at risk the health of players, then whatever you're solving is not worth solving if the solution is risk of health. And I think that's what the three-pitch batter minimum does. And I think the trade deadline is so restrictive that it puts teams in a bind that they will not be able to protect themselves if there are injuries down the stretch.
All right, before we get you out of here, I promised the audience that I would get to this. I've got to ask you on the spot, the name Sid Fernandez. When you hear the name Sid Fernandez, what is the first thing that pops in your mind?
Sid Fernandez came to spring training in shape, and then during the season he put on 30 pounds because he would eat after the game. He would eat. Then he'd get on the plane, whatever the road trip was, eat on the plane, and then when the plane landed, he'd go to eat. and the other thing about him was that in spring training every year, when it was time for his physical, he'd bring in candlesticks and candles and a bottle of wine for the doctor and say, geez, doctor, if we're going to get close, we might as well have wine and candles and get a little romantic first.
I like it. The reason I bring that up is we had Mark Shapiro on a couple of days ago, and I asked him about Vladdy Guerrero Jr., and he said, well, I had a conversation with CC Sabathia about 20 years ago in Cleveland. And I said, you got to get yourself in shape because if you stay in shape and you stay committed, you could be a Hall of Famer. If you don't, you're going to go down this road.
You know, yeah. You could be Sid Fernandez and eat your way out of the game.
So he dropped the Sid Fernandez line. And yeah. I guess in baseball, that's the analogy to use.
Yeah, I guess so. But listen, Sid gets that. Anytime you want a buyout or an annuity, I'm the Bobby Bonilla guy. So we all have our thing, don't we?
That's right, buddy. You know it. Great stuff, Steve. We'll do it again soon. Thank you.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
There's Steve Phillips. Sid Fernandez shows up in shape and then 30 pounds over the course of the season.
He had a good run, man. 13 years of the bigs. Got his ring with the 86 Mets. Not a bad career for a guy that loved to eat.
I guess. The clubhouse food, the plane food, and then the restaurant
food. The town food, yeah.
Or the hotel food.
Love it.
Bob McKenzie, your TSN Hockey Insider, on what went down with the Leafs last night. We'll get into that next. All right, we'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine later in the hour. The Raptors are in action tonight. Kyle Lowry will not play. So the Lakers and LeBron, they're in town. Their only appearance, and Lowry will not play. Danny Green is going to play, and Kawhi Leonard will obviously play. So if Lowry's out and VanVleet isn't back, you got Jeremy Lin playing, what, 40 minutes tonight? Maybe he can finally hit a three tonight?
I wouldn't bet on that one.
No, me neither. Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider in studio. What's happening, Bob?
Not much, boys. How about you?
Well, we're dissecting the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Lots to dissect.
I would say so. What's your focus when you look at what's happened with this team recently? There's a lot of different layers and talking points.
Probably a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
In the glass with a couple of drops full in it, I would say it's a good thing they had the third period they had. It was a little something to cling on to. Doesn't excuse the way they played in the first 40. Doesn't excuse the way they've played lately. And I think a lot of Leaf fans wrestle with what's the problem here? Is the problem a personnel issue? Is the problem just, they're just not playing well? And on the personnel issue, I mean, it's exacerbated by, they're on defense. There's no Dermott, no Gardner. So two of their top six fixture defensemen are not playing. I'm not making excuses for them. I'm just pointing that out. And you obviously, Kapanen was out last night and whoever else is out. But to that point, for a lineup that's got Tavares and Marner and Matthews and Nylander and Johnsson and Kadri and, a veteran like Marleau, and you've still got Riley. See, think about it this way. You've still got Riley, Hainsey, and Zaitsev. So three of their top four defensemen for how long now? For a long
time.
Yeah,
2 years anyway.
Yeah.
2 years.
The only one missing from that group is Jake Gardner.
Right.
So, and at various times, Leaf fans have been ready to plan the parade with Hainsey and Zaitsev in the top four. And so now I don't think you can use that as an excuse as to why things they should be better with the guys that are in the lineup. And so for me, I thought it was, at least in this game, unlike the Tampa game, they showed some signs of life. They came back. They almost tied it up. And that doesn't excuse what happened in the first 40 minutes. And on the first 40 minutes, I don't like the execution of their defensive zone play and all that kind of stuff. But I got to be honest with you. Freddie wasn't very good.
No.
Two of the first, the first goal was a deflection, so you kind of want to give him a free pass, but it leaked right through him.
Yeah.
And the other goal was really soft. So it's tough when you come out and you don't get goaltending. And if anybody should get a free pass, it should be him because of the stellar net mining he's provided all season long. But in the narrow focus of that game last night, that kind of goaltending is not going to win you anything, and it dug your hole real deep.
The one guy who's not getting a pass from anybody is the man behind the bench. Like, Babcock is in the firing line in Toronto. You know the way Toronto reacts.
Yep.
You know how people are feeling about it, and they look at him. He's a stubborn guy. He's got a game plan. He's got a resume that speaks for itself. But defensively, this team is not very good, and he sticks to the same game plan, and it doesn't really alter, and I don't expect that it will between now and April 10th.
Yeah, and so you got to, I guess, if you're going to be a vocal critic of the Maple Leafs, you got to decide whether you're on team criticize the coach or team criticize the manager for the lack of personnel that, isn't getting it done, or whether you're going to criticize the players for not executing. And, I'm sure there's probably plenty of blame to go around on all the levels. In the meantime, it's, small sample size, some adversity. As I said before, after the Tampa game, consider it a blessing that it's happening now. You've got an opportunity to try and fix all these things and get the wake-up calls so that you don't go cruising into the playoffs thinking everything's hunky-dory, and then you get there and things fall apart. So they got a lot to work on.
What do you make, Bob, of the idea? I think Button really articulated it well last night on SportsCenter, just talking about how this really aggressive puck pressure defensive style that Babcock is asking him to play, you know, if it's not too much for the group when they're healthy, it becomes a little too much for this group when they're a little depleted.
Yeah, I don't think Mike's changed the way that they've played, and they've been successful playing this way, but it's always in the results and the execution. And so when you're losing, the coach isn't very smart.
Yeah.
And when you're winning, the players tend to get a pat on the back, and everybody says, that's what you get when you've got star players and
true.
And what have you. But so, you know, some of the time when the Leafs win, they've outscored their problems on defense. And you know, and I'm sure Babcock, you know, you heard him talk glowingly about the St. Louis Blues defense. I'm sure he'd like a lot more guys that are 6'3" or 6'4" that have played in the league for a long time than filling in with guys like Marinchin and Hall and what have you. But it is what it is, and
they're tall. Those guys are tall. You might not like them.
Yeah, that's right.
But they're long, as he said. But it's an interesting one though. You know, Hayes and I were talking about earlier. Like the one thing you maybe could criticize Babcock for is he doesn't exactly veer right. Like he is going to continue to hammer the plan that he believes will work. Is that a fair criticism? Or
I think that's your greatest strength is always your greatest weakness.
Yeah.
For all of us, I've always believed that. So if you're a stubborn individual, you know, you live and die with your decisions. You know, but you know, people would say that about him, and then he switched the lines up, and you know, so. Yeah, I see some flexibility there. I think he just wants to win, and he'll push a lot of buttons to try and make that happen. But I don't know how dramatic any team veers from their style over the course of the season. There's a certain way a team expects to play defensive zone coverage, and I'm not sure very many teams radically alter that because they go on a losing streak.
Yeah.
Bob McKenzie, our Hockey Insider in studio. Here's a headline up on TSN.ca. I just went up 5 minutes ago. Insider trading.
Uh-oh.
If the Oilers miss the playoffs, don't expect McDavid to ask out. I think they're probably going to miss the playoffs.
They're going to miss the playoffs.
They're going to miss the playoffs. So I don't know if this was you reporting it or somebody
no,
else.
No, this was LeBron. It was the last item in insider trading, and we joked that he was going to radio himself somehow.
Well, here we go. We're
talking
on the radio.
About it, and somehow the last item in insider trading got the top billing.
Absolutely.
On the on the tweet.
Well, I mean, it's McDavid.
Those are first world insider problems.
That's right.
But the point Pierre was making was, listen, there are going to be some people who say, how much longer if the Oilers miss the playoffs, and as you say, it's less if and more likely that they will, how long is it going to be before the best player in the game who's had 300-point seasons now is so fourth year in the league and the third time he's missed the playoffs. How long is it going to be before he says, uncle, come on.
Yeah.
I'm in the first year of an 8-year deal and we're terrible and we're looking for a new general manager and we're looking for a new head coach and my goodness, you know. So, and Pierre's simple point was that McDavid's a team guy. He's the heart and soul of that team. He wants to fix it. But at some point, the patience has to run out. When that is, who knows? And that's probably, and I think the point Pierre was making is that's why this general manager hire that Edmonton is going to make is so critical. Because if they don't get it right and they spin their wheels at all, now you're treading into that territory where, so you got to, okay, so new GM gets hired postseason, comes in, starts making moves. So let's give them at least a year to 2 years. If they're still just spinning their wheels at that point, and McDavid's now 3 years into an 8-year deal, and they still haven't, they've only made the playoffs once in his tenure as an Edmonton Oiler, you know, I think it's predictable where that storyline goes.
Well, who do you think has the first conversation with him? Do you think it's Cates, is it Nicholson, or is it the new GM? Because I would think if I'm in Edmonton, I got to get to this guy
the
season
ends.
Honestly,
I think there's constant dialogue. When you've got a player like Connor McDavid, those players tend to be apprised of how things are proceeding and what the various plans are.
Do you think he's included in any
of the discussions about
GM?
I don't believe that, and I don't believe he wants to be. He's a hockey player. He wants to play. He's got his job, and, you know, famous do your job, Bill Belichick stuff, but right. It is. It's do your job. McDavid's doing his job. Now the Oilers, Bob Nicholson and Darryl Cates, need to do their job, hire a general manager, and that general manager needs to do his job, hire a good coach, and that coach, and then everybody on down the line does what they're supposed to do. Just do your job, and that's it.
I've seen a couple of the media types in Edmonton peddling the idea of Keith Gretzky actually sticking around. Is that actually valid? Could he be in the running? Or
yes and no. I mean, I think they've liked what he's done coming in. And I think they want to be fair to him and say, hey, listen, are you interested in the job? And I suspect he probably is. And so they're saying, okay, well, you know what? You're here. You're doing the job now. We will make you part of that process. And that's fair. There's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't mean that they're just going to give it to him. And it doesn't mean that they have no plans to give it to him. What it means is they're going to go out and they've got, I believe, 8 to 12 names, some of whom they get access to now, some of whom they won't be able to access until various seasons are over. And he'll be one of the guys. And, you know, if he's the best guy, well, then they'd feel confident in giving him a job after they've done the thorough process. But if he's not, then if they can find somebody better, then they will.
How long do you think it actually takes, Bob? Like, do you see any roadmap to a quick turnaround here, given the baggage they've got to get rid of if they're going to make that turnaround?
You know what? In a way, I do. Like, I think one of the things about today's game in the NHL, and it's been true since the salary cap came in, but even much more so lately, teams get good or bad in a hurry.
Yeah.
Every year, there's two or three teams we think are going to be hot garbage, and they're in the playoffs at the end of the year. And every year, there's two or three teams we think for sure, are playoff teams, and they end up being hot garbage. So, you know, they got big holes. There's no question. The depth after McDavid, Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins up front is pronounced. The lack of a star on defense or a legit top pairing guy, as well as some of the depth guys. But it's funny. It's going to take a general manager to come in. I think the number one thing they need to do is they got to get creative right away and figure out how they're going to lose some contracts and get out of the salary cap hell they're in. It's one thing to be as bad as the oil have been for the last couple of years. It's another thing to do it as a salary cap team that's got all sorts of financial pressure on them. You know, those two things shouldn't go together. If you're that low in the standings and you're underperforming, then boy oh boy, you should have the ability to go out and sign some free agents. And again, as long as Connor McDavid's there and you could open up some cap room and you've got the right people as the manager and the coach, it could still be an attractive place. There'll be lots of players that would say, yeah, you know what? I understand that things haven't gone well for them for the last 14 years or yeah. thereabouts.
Yeah.
But you know what? I bet on this McDavid kid, and if I get a chance to play with him, that would be fun.
Well, what if you just surrounded him with a bunch of $750,000 salary guys that could really skate? You know, like wouldn't that be a start?
I mean, think you might need more skill than that. But
speed wouldn't be. But there's they no don't have enough speed.
They and you know what? And they feel like they've got guys coming. They feel like there are guys in Bakersfield and Jay Woodcroft, who took a lot of heat as an assistant coach with Todd McLellan because I believe he was running the power play, and the power play under McLellan wasn't very good. And so when they rejigged all the coaching staff and then McLellan got jettisoned, Woodcroft got sent to coach the American League team, and they've been on this incredible winning streak, and, mm-hmm. and things are going really well, and the kids are really developing, and guys like Tyler Benson and others. So they do have some bottom half of the lineup guys that are not devoid of skill and the ability to play the game who are coming. So that's helpful on that front. And if they could sort out the Puljujarvi thing, I don't know if they can or whether he's going to sort it out. Mm. But, you know, that would be helpful too. They're going to need a creative mind that gets that general manager job, because it's not just, I'm going to add this guy in free agency or I'm going to go make this trade, because right now they're hamstrung by the finances of it.
Well, they could always win another draft lottery. You know, that could help. And it was announced today that the lottery is going to be April 9th, which I think makes a lot of sense.
I love the Tuesday after the regular season ends.
Right.
I hated that going to the end of the going to the end of the month that they did
right
for the last number of years.
In between an intermission, it never made any sense.
Nah, I love
it. This should be a standalone event.
Plus, the night before the playoffs begin, now you know, like, the regular season's over. You've got your order outside of your the part of the playoffs that determine order of selection for the teams when they get eliminated. It's nice to know on April 9th this team's what the order is, and it helps the teams that are picking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, especially in the top 10. Now they're going to know before they go to the under 18 World Championships. Now they know before all the other, you know, things that are going on, mm-hmm. college hockey, Frozen Four, whatever the case may be. You're going to know all that stuff before you go.
Big news in Ontario this week. Shane Wright has been granted exceptional status. He was with that Don Mills team that I think they're still playing, as far as I know.
Yeah, they're in the OHL Cup right now. I was out the other night.
Yeah, I heard about that. Someone sent me a text, a buddy of mine. He's got a kid on Halton. He's like, yeah, Mackenzie's down here. Why aren't you here? I'm like, well, I'm doing the radio right now. And really, I just don't care to go out there and watch them. But my obviously, he's exceptional. I mean, how good is this Shane Wright kid?
Yeah, he's a very good player. And I always shy away from going too crazy on these kids that get exceptional status, because unfortunately the terminology of exceptional and what it became, because it started with John Tavares and Aaron Ekblad and then Connor McDavid, and so it became the equation of, if you get exceptional status, it means that you're going to go first overall in the NHL draft and you're going to have a star-studded NHL career. And then along comes Joe Valeno and Sean Day and what have you, and it should be more, it's more about, they're trying to determine which 15-year-olds are so good that they should go directly to junior hockey as opposed to having to play midget for a year, a
right.
their minor midget year. That's all it is. Nobody is saying if you get exceptional status, you are guaranteed to be the next Connor McDavid. Yet, that's the human nature part of it. So anyways, having said all that, Shane Wright's a hell of a player. And now I'll go one step further and radio myself terribly. I'm going to say he's not Sidney Crosby, but when you watch him play, he's got the same body type as Sidney Crosby. He doesn't skate like Sidney Crosby per se, but he plays a similar style. He's strong on pucks. He's got a low center of gravity. He can really change direction. He can make plays, tremendous passer. He's got a great shot. So make plays, score goals. And he's like, as I say, I think he's probably 5'11", 190 pounds, 195 pounds.
Oh, really?
So he's
built.
He's a well-built kid that's got the low center of gravity, and he's sort of a right shot. And when you see him line up for a face-off, you look at him, and outside of the fact he's a right shot and Sidney's a left shot, you kind of go, oh, wow. Like, that's funny how similar their physical characteristics are. And I'm not, by any stretch of the imagination, saying this kid's going to have the same impact in junior hockey or the NHL that Sidney Crosby had. But I'm just saying that in terms of physical characteristics and the style they play are very similar.
We assume he's going first overall?
Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
Neo? He'll go first overall for
there's
sure?
No question. And, you know, unless he was one of those kids that came in and said, I'm not going to this place.
I don't want to play at that place.
Right, yeah. Now, Kingston's almost certainly going to have the first overall pick. Flint started to win some hockey games in the second half. Good on them. But
good for Shane.
You know.
Stay in Ontario.
Exactly. And the, you know, I think back to when Connor McDavid got exceptional status. And, you know, Erie at that time was viewed as an outpost. They weren't very good. And he didn't even give any thought to, I'm not going to report here. Mm-hmm. I want to go report there. So credit to him. And I don't know what's going on with the right kid, but I assume it's the same sort of deal.
Right.
And that he'll be happy to go to Kingston or what have you.
Always good seeing you, Bob. Thank you for popping in studio. We'll see you again soon.
Sounds great.
There's Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider. LeBron is playing tonight. Lowry not playing tonight. We'll tee that up. We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine next. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Kyle Lowry not playing tonight. LeBron will be playing. LeBron in Toronto generally shows up. The spread is 10.5. So I'm going to say that the Lakers keep it closer than that. I think Toronto will win tonight. You know, Kawhi's playing. Danny Green will play tonight. But Serge Ibaka's out. Lowry's out. Van Fleet, we know, is already out. And LeBron is borderline healthy, and by himself, I think he can cover that spread. I'm going to lay the points. Boston big at home against Sacramento. And Oklahoma City, I will take them in Indiana. the Pacers are starting to come back to reality. Like, they're starting to realize this isn't their year. It probably wasn't going to be anyway, but Oladipo's been out for what, like a month now, a month and a half?
It was going to happen.
It was inevitable. They weren't holding on to that third seed. There was no way. Throw down 20, you can score 100. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. Don't forget that TSN 1050 and redtag.ca want to send you on a Maple Leaf playoff road trip. To enter, you have to follow us on Instagram, at TSN 1050 on Instagram. Look for our playoff road trip post every Monday morning and tag a roadworthy friend. Then make sure you listen to Overdrive on Friday. And if your Instagram handle gets announced, you will have 10 minutes and 50 seconds to call in and claim your trip for two. All the details up on the website, tsn1050.ca. Everything podcasted up on the website. You can also subscribe and check us out on iTunes as well. LeBron's going tonight. LeBron is going. He had himself a time last night down on King West. That's my understanding. But
I heard about
he's a
that.
Professional. He used to do that in the playoffs, so it doesn't matter now in the regular season.
Hey, man, he loves partying in Toronto, and it was still LeBronto when the playoffs rolled around.
Yep, and I guess it's OVO night tonight.
Yeah.
You and I were both cynical by nature, but we don't think it's a coincidence that this whole Drake announcement happened when LeBron was in town.
No.
I think that seems pretty obvious because, you know, LeBron will be asked about his relationship with Drake and how great Drake is. And
although he never gets too cozy about that. He always keeps a bit of a distance, even though you know they're friends and they definitely spend some time together. But LeBron is cagey about what he says publicly about that type of stuff.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
He has been. I mean, especially since maybe less so now because he's not a rival of the Raptors per se. But when he was with the Cavs, he was a little.
What does he
cagey.
Care anymore? You know,
that's
like
true.
He's finally going to have a full offseason.
Yeah.
Like this guy went to the NBA Finals 8 years in a row.
Eight straight times.
Finals.
It's hard to imagine.
This guy was playing into June for eight straight years.
It's
and
amazing.
now he's done in like 3 weeks. He's done.
It's incredible when you think about the mileage on that body at age 34, the number of games he's played at the level he's played. It's fascinating. But man, it will be, you talk about great summers to come. This NBA summer and what LeBron does, because this is make or break, right? Like if Magic Johnson and LeBron James can't figure it out this summer, like it's over. Like he's gonna people wrote some pretty interesting ideas about having to trade LeBron. Move on from LeBron. If you can't make somebody come there, if you can't get a Durant or you can't get a Kawhi, and it doesn't seem like those guys are odds on favorites to go. I mean, maybe you just got to move on and say, hey, it was a mistake. Just not working.
Well, here. I saw Rick Bucher had a report that Jeannie Buss, the owner of the Lakers, was so rattled with the whole debauchery surrounding the Anthony Davis pursuit and was particularly upset with Rich Paul, the agent for LeBron James. Basically, the report is suggesting she blamed Rich Paul for that deal falling through and to the point where she was going to demand, I don't know if that's true or not, but that LeBron be traded because she wanted nothing to do with LeBron and Rich Paul and the whole circus that is, you know, LeBron's entourage and everything that comes with it, specifically Rich Paul.
Funny how there'd be a sports owner that wouldn't like the idea of a player coming in and trying to run their franchise
right.
for them.
But good luck with that. LeBron's not going anywhere. Like, well, LeBron is not going.
I don't know, man. Like, if they come up empty, if they swing and a miss on free agency this summer, like, what's the point of having him?
Well, I hear you, and he doesn't have a no-trade clause somehow.
No, that's the NBA.
Yeah, that's strange. Tiger finishing 2-under at the Players today, so he's off and running.
He's hanging in.
Yep. Great seeing you, Dave, as
Good
always.
See you.
We'll do it again soon. There's Dave Festchuk from the Toronto Star. Noodles will be back tomorrow. Dutchie's in here, I believe. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.